I had a few more Dundies to give out tonight, but I'm just going to cut it short and wrap it up so everybody can enjoy their food. Thanks for listening, those of you who listened. This last Dundee is for Kevin. This is the Don't Go In There After Me Award. It's for the time that I went to the bathroom after him and it was really, really smelly.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, episode 2 of the week. Ethan Weiss here with you. Special guest Will Brinson here to preview Giants Panthers. Will, thanks for joining us. Recurring guest, actually.
Yeah, that's right. I said that I thought it was Dan's podcast. I was lying.
Well, I hope he's listening and he's
filled. Yeah. The problem is when you podcast daily for like 5 straight years, as you freaking forget, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, oh, my entire life is spent in front of this stupid webcam, usually wearing a hat. I'm wearing a visor. Oh, it's only audio. I can take my hat off. My entire life is spent in front of this webcam talking about football, which is not a bad life. It's just
a great life.
It's a great life. It's just like that. Like there's this podcast. It's so much podcasting. And I tell my son I'm a YouTuber now. I'm probably I got my new bookshelf up.
There you go.
Picture of Robbie. He can be on YouTube constantly now, which is, he'll be excited about.
You are part of the Pick Six podcast.
I am. I am the Pick Six. Right.
How do you go every day? Because during the season, it's easy, right? But like when we're talking,
June and July is hell on earth.
Yeah. How do you do that? Like what? How do you get by?
Physically or mentally, or like what do you like?
What can you talk about? Like at what?
Well, it's weird because people get mad. They're like, you're not even talking about football. You're talking about like is Better Call Saul better than Breaking Bad, which I guess we're going to talk about tonight too. But it's like,
which I agree with you, by the way.
Yeah, it's wrong. It's just factually
accurate. But anyway, we'll get to that in a minute. But like,
yeah,
I mean, we just sort of make it sucks. I mean, honestly, it's not, I think the shows are still entertaining because we're talking about random stuff, but it's not like a meaty discussion about, we could be better too, I suppose, where we're like breaking down like film of like stuff from last year, but it's also like, the 6-week stretch in June where there's no training camp and the draft is done. And like the NFL is like, hey, look, this is our vacation time.
Right.
I mean, I'll usually take 2 weeks of vacation in that stretch and try to avoid this podcast as best I can. It's not, like that's the point of time when I start, I open up the podcast, I'm like, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Big Six podcast. And we're like daily on YouTube for now until the end of eternity, because this is never going to, it's like, it feels like the end of eternity. But then football gets here and you get a little jaded too, I guess, if you do this for a long time where you don't, I'm bad about that. Like I wasn't excited about football for the 3 weeks leading up to it. And part of that too is not being I'm not a diehard Panthers fan the way I would have been 15 years ago or 20 years ago. Right. Like sure. I don't care if the Panthers win or lose. Like I really don't. And that's not me being objective journalist, dude. It's just like, I don't care. Yeah. Like I just, I just don't care as much anymore. Right.
That phase of your life is over. It's like, this is a different phase.
Well, it's just like, you're in it. Like, I'm just not going to be like, it's also the Panthers.
That's true. Hard to be passionate about the Panthers. Yeah. You're a little burnt out. You're in the thick of it every day. So it's
like the Giants. I feel like, you guys have, I guess you haven't won much lately.
No.
Except for last week.
Yeah.
All right. Right. No, but I feel like the Giants too is like
totally.
Also like, I grew up a Panthers fan, but I didn't, the Panthers weren't present in my life when I was like 5 to 10 years old, like that just because of how old I am. Whereas the Giants are like omnipresent in your life. And it's like the Giants are a little, I don't know. It's like the Giant, it's like win a Super Bowl and then suck for five. Like, it's like, and then now right. like, it's like you're almost like more passionate because they suck.
If you think about it, the Giants are that like prime hypothetical. You ask like a Cleveland Browns fan, like, oh, you know, if you guys won a Super Bowl, would you be fine with being totally shit for 15 years?
They would, not true.
They would say yes.
But it's not true.
No.
Like you win the Super Bowl and you're like, okay, like I'm not Let's like checking again. Out. Like, all right, we're right. done here. No, yeah, like yeah. you're like, I want more.
Yeah. Yeah. Again. Yeah.
I mean, I
remember. And you guys had like, I mean, like, I mean, McAdoo, who's now with the Panthers, Ben McAdoo revenge game coming up this week. I mean,
big time.
You know, there's the Ben McAdoo phase where, you know, OBJ on the, they go to the playoffs, but OBJ's on the boat, and then he benches Eli for Geno, and then was it, and then Shermer, and yeah. then followed by Joe Judge. It's like, which is, it's this comedy of errors revolving around this blue chip, like, you know, very old school NFL franchise that all of a sudden is like, wait a minute, it's been. And Giants fans, you know, New York people are just more aggressive than like, you know, Carolina people. Like Carolina people are just mad, oh my God, you know, just mad rednecks, right? You guys are like like screaming on Twitter. Like the Giants Twitter is hilarious when the Giants suck.
Oh my God. No, it's a bloodbath. It's a war zone where we despise each other. I think this past weekend was probably the only time where there was an ounce of unity amongst like
that was fun, man. I like that.
It was so much fun.
It was very fun.
Yeah. And it doesn't feel like watching Brian Daboll dance in the, like he just lays his nuts on the table and goes for two on the road, which is what you always want your coach to do.
Always.
You don't want your coach to be some scared spineless weasel who just will not, you know, go for it. You know, like Joe Judge took a knee, like took knees on third down.
We saw that play live. We were there. Yeah. And we just went from a coach who went back to back QB sneaks on second and third down on his own five to a coach whose balls are so big they're gonna have to renovate MetLife.
And then one of the things that I always talked about with the Giants this offseason was, you know, you bring in Joe Shane and you bring in Brian Daboll. And the thing that's so I think is so important if you're trying to be positive about the regime change is that is exactly what Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean did coming from Carolina to Buffalo. Is they wanted somebody they could trust, somebody they could work with, somebody that they knew, they trusted their personnel evaluations, they trusted their vision of how they want to operate. And granted, Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott had a year difference, but that's because what's his name?
Doug Marrone.
No, the old Bills GM, Doug Whaley.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, because Whaley technically drafted EJ Manuel, even though it was Buddy Nix who did it. For some reason, Doug Whaley's like, yeah, that was me. It's like, why? What are you doing? Like, why would you take credit for that? Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, so Whaley had to stick around for 1 year, and so Brandon Bean couldn't come right away. But it's the same principle, and it's from the same organization, from Buffalo, and they're aligned. Their vision is aligned, and it's very clear that it's very clear to me anyway, like reading between the lines, that unlike previous regime changes in New York, it's not about selling the, I always say their name. I always call it, is it Mara or Mara? I always say Mara.
John Mara.
Yeah.
It's John Mara. Mara. I always say, Nick Costos gets mad at me because I say Mara. He's like, you're a redneck. He says Mara. I'm like, whatever. So it's like Mara and Tish to me, it looks like they did not come in and say, hey, oh yeah, we can make Daniel Jones work. We will make it work. They're like, look, we're gonna do what we learn for the guys we work for in Buffalo, and we're gonna build this back into a proud, reasonable franchise that isn't churning, you know, year over year. And it might take some time. It might be quick. We don't know. But you're gonna have to be patient, and you're gonna have to let us do what let us enact our vision.
Yeah,
that's what good franchises do. Is they
it's like, the first the
Panthers.
Time.
Panthers are the perfect example, and I'm sorry, I'm rambling, but the Panthers are the perfect example of like why it doesn't work. Like David Tepper can't be patient. And as a result, the Panthers are not going to get there because they're trying to accelerate the process.
But do you know what John Mara's big problem was? It's very simple. I hire you as a GM. I bring in a coach, Pat Shermer, Dave Gettleman. 2 years later, I realize that it's a complete shit show. And I fire Pat Shermer and I keep Dave Gettleman.
They had blind loyalty to Dave Gettleman because he was the pro personnel guy for two Super
Bowls. And then I hire Joe Judge, and then I got a GM who's on a hot seat, and I got a new head coach.
Correct.
Trying to, you know, like it just doesn't work. Now
there's conflicting agendas.
Exactly.
In terms of like the difference is you have a GM and a coach who need to work together. You right. cannot be trying to. The Jets did this for years too, where yep. you would fire the coach and keep the GM and let this GM who's kind of hot seated pick a new coach. And then it's like, well, we're going to fire both of you. It, like you have to have the vision aligned between the GM and the head coach. Otherwise, it's basic business.
Right. This is the first time in such a long time where everyone from ownership to the water boy is on the same page
right.
and knows what the plan is and is here to execute that plan. And it's just beyond refreshing.
Well, I mean, literally the last time it would have actually been like that was it Corsi, the GM in 07 or maybe 2011, excuse me, or was it?
Jerry Reese took over in 2007.
Yeah.
Oh, technically Reese was the GM for 07. Okay, that's right. That's right. Yeah. So technically it would have been 07, 11, but I kind of feel like by 2013, Reese and Tom Coughlin were, because I don't know how you guys feel about Jerry Reese, but I kind of feel like benefited greatly from what Ernie, of course, he set up.
Yeah, well, he did, but he was also
the part of that front office.
For sure. Yeah. So was Dave Gettleman.
Okay, yeah, true. All right, maybe we'll have to revisit that take then.
Well, Dave Gettleman
he has two Super Bowls. Like, I'm not trying to knock
Dave Gettleman reminds us that he was a part of those two Super Bowl teams every single time he got a chance. So
he talked about it nonstop in Carolina. He's like, we got two Super Bowls. It's like, well, Dave, you just drafted Dave Gettleman's
back to back running backs in the first round.
Two running backs for two different franchises in the top 10.
Yeah.
In back to back years. He has to be the only person to ever do that.
He must be.
And think about the quarterbacks in those drafts, too.
Yeah.
Patrick Mahomes.
They passed on Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. Yeah. At the time,
the Michael Jordan in the NFL, as Dabo Swinney said.
Yeah. I mean, the Watson. Are we just crotch shouting now? Is that what's
no? I was muting my other laptop. No, I'm muting my other laptop.
I actually did that for an entire podcast by accident because I was
just camera right.
Well, I didn't realize I was recording on my laptop. I'd like turned it down to like try and type it. They're like, "Hey man, you're just like showing us your pants." Anywho,
all right. New York Giants, Carolina Panthers. I want to ask you a quick question about Carolina.
Sure.
Is Matt Rhule the coach in Nebraska by Thanksgiving?
I don't think that they will. Hire. I mean, I agree with what you're asking. Yes, but I don't think he'll actually be the coach of Nebraska by Thanksgiving. I think that they will. I don't know how Tepper's going to play this, honestly.
Well, that's what we want to know, because we are two guys who were just banging the table for Matt Rhule when the Giants wound up with Joe Judge. And, you know, obviously at the end of the day, it sort of worked out in our favor, now hitting the reset button and bringing Daboll in and his whole staff. And it's been fantastic. But from a Carolina perspective, like, how hot is the seat? I imagine it has to be
scorching.
Hot. Okay. David Especially Tepper, with Tepper. Yeah.
Tepper is like, I mean, in my opinion, Tepper is itching to fire. Like, he fired the coach of his soccer team. He fired like the GM and like the coach of the soccer team. People are bouncing in weird spots to the point where it's like, I don't know David Tepper. But he's a hedge fund manager. He's a hedge fund manager.
He's rich as fuck and super competitive.
He's the second. He was the richest owner by a large margin until the Walton bought the Broncos.
Right.
And I mean, you guys I'm sure have heard this story, but he has a literal pair of veiny brass testicles on his, do you guys don't know this?
He's
a gigantic, like the size of, I haven't seen them. You can see them. There's an article about it, but they're like, there's like a gigantic pair of brass balls. They're like,
incredible.
With like testicles with like veins on them. Like they're lifelike in their testicular nature. And they sit on his desk behind, like he has his desk, like sit on his like credenza behind his desk.
Oh my God.
And it's because he's making it known that he has giant balls. Well, when you're like that aggressively over alpha in your approach to running a hedge fund, you are not going to be patient with losing.
Nope.
And the thing about Carolina, if you look at what happened over the last couple of years, when this weird, the quarterback trades had never happened before, right? We'd never seen this like at least this volume. Yeah, we'd seen, yeah, you know, obviously
the musical chairs of quarterbacks.
Right. Well, they tried to get Stafford, and Stafford did not want to come to Carolina. Tried to get Watson twice. He did not want to come to Carolina. They tried to get Carson Wentz, and Carson Wentz did not want to come to Carolina.
Damn.
So they panicked and settled on Sam Darnold. And then they went out and got Baker, and they traded up and got Matt Corral. Like, they basically spent two, I think it's like a first and a third when you combine the actual value Darnold on those three guys.
Yeah.
Which is not great.
Some would say awful.
Well, some would say absolutely terrible. Right. And the problem is this trend of quarterback swapping teams accelerated the David Tepper. Basically, Matt Rhule came and said, here's my plan. This is what I did at Temple. This is what I did at Baylor. You know, it's like a 3 to 4 year, 5 year plan. It's going to take some time. The Panthers don't have a great roster. The quarterback availability accelerated the rebuild for David Tepper, in my opinion. And
so let me ask you a question then. So from my perspective, and I was a huge Baker guy when he was in Oklahoma. I wanted Baker. I hoped that he didn't go first overall, and the Giants had it. They wouldn't have taken him anyway. But
They might have. Although Gettleman was talking at the owners' meetings. I remember this as clear as day. It was in Orlando, and this is when he said, "I will not." I was standing from, not me to you, but me to my computer.
Right.
And he was like, "We were not trading Odell, but we didn't sign him to trade him." And then right after that, he was like, "I need a guy with a gold, like who can I can see in a gold jacket." It's like, "Oh my god, this guy's taking Saquon." Like this guy.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I mean, like from my perspective, like I think Baker's a good quarterback. I don't think he's a great quarterback. Like I think he's solid. But what I don't understand is, I mean, I guess it sort of makes sense just from like a David Tepper perspective, is after the season last year, they fired Joe Brady. And what right? Wasn't it after?
Was it after the season?
It was like the middle of the season.
Middle of the season.
Right. Yeah. Even worse, honestly. So they fired Joe Brady. But like, if you go back and look at the offense that Joe Brady was helping to coordinate in LSU with Joe Burrow, like that was a high octane offense. That was one of the best offenses in college ever.
Yeah.
And then you go into the pros, and it seems like Matt Rhule's like, run the ball, like that old school mentality, which just doesn't add up. Like none of it fits together.
Well, I mean, let's go back to what we originally started talking about is the unity between the GM, right, the head coach. Basically, I mean, this is the scuttlebutt. I mean, yeah, you would have to, no one ever admit it. But basically, I think when David Tepper found out, when Joe Burrow ran the table and Joe Brady was the hot name.
Right.
Basically, David Tepper was like, you're hiring this guy to be the OC.
Sure. Very, very much like John Mara forced Jason Garrett on.
Foisted. It's a foisted curb situation. Right. Yeah, exactly. And so I think that Matt Rhule, if you gave him truth serum and said, what do you want to do? I think he'd be like, I want to go. I mean, this is, he's like, basically I think he would leave if he could, but he doesn't want the Carolina job to permanently impact his ability to get another NFL job. So he does, you know what I'm saying? So like,
do you think he's a guy that has to go back to college first?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
Just because, yeah, I mean, it's also, you don't want to be in a situation like an Adam Gase or somebody else who did it. I mean, Pat Shermer, I guess, situation where it's like, dude, you took a really bad job to start with, mm-hmm. and then you took another bad job. Like, stop. Rex Ryan did it. Did Rex do it with the Bills? Maybe not. But it's like these head coaching jobs are hard to come by, so guys are willing to take bad jobs. It's like, don't, if you take a first bad job and then take a second bad job, you're not getting a third bad job. You're not getting a third job at all, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we're sort of seeing it even with Joe Judge. He wound up back in New England trying to call plays. I mean, best of luck to you.
I think Belichick's calling him, but yes.
Yeah, I mean, they had that open competition. It was like a quarterback competition, but it was between Matt Patricia, a defensive coordinator, Joe Judge was a special teams coordinator.
You remember when Juan Castillo went from being the offensive line coach?
That's
to
what I told somebody over the summer. Coordinator. Yeah. I don't think Carolina's roster is that bad right now. I think they're a fringe playoff team. I think their only weakness is the NFC is
I've described them repeatedly down here as a fringe potential playoff team.
That's so one level down.
Yeah, just a little bit down. Right. So you're not wrong. I agree.
I really like their defense, and I think Brian Burns is probably the most underrated player in the NFL.
Okay.
Underrated defensive player in the NFL.
I'm not disagreeing. I'm just, so I'm like trying to rapid fire through like 9,000 defensive players to see if I, you know, like I think it's a, I think Brian Burns is really good. Their defense, this is how I explained Carolina coming into the season. They are a fringe potential playoff team, but there are three or four things that have to happen. And if any one of those things doesn't happen, this team could potentially crater. And one of the things is the offensive line has to be good. It doesn't look that way. Like, I'm an NC State guy. I love Ikem Ekwonu. He had a rough day against Myles Garrett.
Expect it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the whole offensive line had a really, really bad day.
There was some formation stuff that was very curious. Like, they had a – so Myles Garrett had, like, back-to-back sacks in the third quarter, I think, on Baker. Maybe it was the second. But in watching it, they were basically giving Garrett a free release – at Icky, which is just what I mean, you need somebody, make him work harder, make him work longer, make him work more north to south, whatever you got to do. Do not give one of the three best pass rushers in football a direct line at your rookie left tackle, who admittedly before the draft even said, I was there when he said it, he said, I need to work on my pass pro, that's not my strength. I'm a, you know, like, right. He's an incredible run game guy. I think he'll can get better at the pass pro, but like, that's a tough opening gig to have to go on an island with Myles Garrett. The roster's not, but again, like the offensive line has to be good. A couple of three, probably defensive guys have to take a leap or need to take a leap this year. And I think Burns, Derek Brown, and maybe whether it's Jeremy Chinn or JC Horn.
I'm a huge JC Horn guy.
Yeah. JC Horn's a stud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, what, three of those guys have to take a big leap forward, and then Baker has to play like even year Baker, you know, like,
yeah. I mean, outside the offensive line, and I mean, you just mentioned a few guys, but like on paper, like an offense of Baker, DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, Christian McCaffrey, it's pretty good. But
hey, McCaffrey has to play 17 games. That's one of them. Or like 15 games. That's
sure. But yeah, like if I put like 14, he can miss three.
12 and a half.
Yeah, a little like load that. Management, yeah. Never hurt anybody.
Yeah. I need some sometimes too. Yeah,
I actually think that this matchup is a tougher matchup for the Giants than the Tennessee Titans were. Just because the Titans are such a run-heavy team. And I think both teams have very good defensive fronts and defenses as a whole. And then the difference, I think, is Baker's a gunslinger. He'll throw the ball. And the Titans receivers, like I think DJ Moore, University of Maryland bias.
Oh, they God. Yeah, I'm leaving. I guess you've been in the Big Ten for so long that you don't like one of the first interviews I ever did was with Sean Merriman at the Super Bowl. Okay, here it was probably like 2010 or 11. And I was like, hey man, look, I'm an NC State guy. He goes, oh yeah. So you love my boy Philip with three L's because he never beat me in college. I was like, oh my God, that is. Or maybe it's Philip with four L's because we went 0-4 against Maryland. Maryland, oh my God, this is my least favorite sports memory of all time. Maryland comes to Raleigh, ACC title on the line, Like whoever wins is going to the Orange Bowl. And Maryland beat us in Carter Finley. And there are Maryland fans bombing oranges onto the field. Like I might hate Maryland more than they're definitely my number two most hated school of all time. Anyway, sorry.
So, well, we could talk about that, but I do.
Torrey Smith lit us up. Oh my God.
Ever since Ralph Regan left Maryland, that football program has down the drain, but DJ Moore, he's a very good receiver. Robbie Anderson, I think, is a quality wide receiver too.
He's a good number two to take the top off.
Yes. And then obviously Christian McCaffrey in the backfield.
McCaffrey is what's going to give the Giants fits. If you saw what Hilliard did to the Giants
line. And like, hey, by the way, do you think it's a good idea to have 5 to 10 former Temple players on your roster?
Definitely not.
and no Hassan Reddick. I mean, if you were to tell me name a Temple football player, the only one I can think of is Hassan Reddick.
Like PJ Walker, the backup quarterback for the Panthers, also. Yeah.
I mean, I would have to
literally has like five. Like,
AFL or XFL, whatever league.
I mean, Robbie Anderson's one too.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. So,
By the way, I looked it up because it still bothers me today. Do you know what Torrey Smith's line was against NC State in the final regular season game of 2010?
No.
14 catches,
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That was
224 yards and four touchdowns.
That was a game that made him a first round pick, I think. That was the big. I remember that.
Anyway, sorry.
No problem.
I had a bunch of beers at golf. My bad.
he had a 71 yard touchdown catch.
Yeah. Yes, he did. That was the game that made him, Torrey Smith, a first round pick. If you go back and look at, I don't know if you could pull up
20. He beat Russell Wilson. I got it up right now. See, they won. Y'all won 38-31. And we scored.
NC State still loves Russell Wilson, right?
Yeah.
So NC State.
I don't think many people still
love him. He's a Wisconsin guy now. It's like, what is it, Mr. Incredible? Mr. Unlimited. It's like, what? Oh. No, stop. Stop doing these cringy things on social media, Russell.
Faith, family, football.
Oh, God. That was
Broncos country. Let's ride. So bad. Oh, my God. Monday night's game. Monday night's game. Disaster.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry. In my defense, I derail my podcast like 42 times per
week. We love to go off the rails.
Look at our podcast as just three guys sitting at a bar having a conversation.
Oh, yeah. No, that's exactly what's going on. I'm drinking like,
so
yeah. I'm going to have to leave in like 3 minutes to go get more bourbon because I've already got in class.
What's your bourbon of choice?
This is Maker's Mark 46 that's like French oak that I just happened to see at the store the other day and cracked
it. I like Maker's.
Yeah, Maker's is not my normal. I'm probably a Buff. I mean, like Buff Trace in a perfect situation. I would say my house bourbon is the Four Roses single barrel or Four Roses select.
Yeah, Four Roses is good. I like Bullet. I like Basil Hayden.
Basil Hayden. I drink a lot of Basil Hayden.
That's like one of my go-tos.
Yeah, me too. Because it's, you can drink a lot of it.
Yes.
Lower ABV, and it's like very smooth. Yeah, Basil Hayden. Yeah, Basil Hayden. Four Roses.
I got one for you to try. It's like a Northeast. I'm pretty sure it's from New York. I don't know if you have it. Hudson Baby Bourbon.
I've seen that.
It's like a very thick stout bottle with the wax on top.
Okay, I'll check it out. We have that here, I think.
Yeah.
Woodenville is good if you hadn't had it.
No, I haven't.
They're my buddy is a rep for vodka. I'll think of it in a minute. Anyway, he has it's, you want to go out with Chip because
Are you a cigar guy, Will, or no?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. You smoke cigar on the golf course today or no?
No, I don't smoke them on the reg. I don't really smoke a bunch, but like my dad's a big, I scuba dive. My dad's a big scuba diver.
Okay.
So like usually when I smoke cigars will be, when we're down in the Caribbean or like the Caymans and, you can get like some, like legit Cuban there.
Yeah. Although I was in the Bahamas and somebody tried to sell me a fake Cuban for like $60 on the beach.
It's an actual Seinfeld episode, I believe. Yeah, it is. He ends up buying.
I went into the resort and the guy's like, hey, I was like, can I get a Cohiba? He's like, yeah, $120. Like, what?
That seems steep.
But then he was like, hey, we got a guy that rolls his own cigars here. And it's like, I was like, how much is that? And he was like, $30. I was like, okay, let me get one of those.
Yeah.
So the guy rolled it for me, gave it to me. And it tastes better than a Cuban.
I'm sure. Yes. Hand rolled. Yeah. I'm not a big cigar on the golf course guy. I will do it if someone has them, but I don't know why. I feel like sometimes if I'm ripping cigars on the golf course, I feel like it can throw my game off a little bit. Like if it's like, you know what I mean? Like it's an extra thing you got to deal with while you're trying to.
I was just about to say extra thing to worry about. You're putting it down on like the tee box and Yeah.
If I'm drunk on the golf course, then the cigars come more into play, but then I end up like my throat's torched and I'm, So
yeah,
but no cigars today, but I will smoke a cigar. No.
I smoke one before every Giants game I go to.
Do you really?
At the tailgate. Yeah.
Is that stemming from like a victory or a loss?
No, it's just like hey, we're amongst what friends. Yeah, exactly. What victory? The last 4 or 5 years have been just totally.
So you're saying that's what I'm wondering. Like, you started this during a losing streak? Because
here's the thing. I had a cigar saved for when they fired Dave Gettleman, but they didn't even fire him. They just let him retire.
This is just sitting there.
That was so. That was like the that like is so succinctly describes the Dave Gettleman era where they allowed him to retire.
Not just allowed him to retire.
There was a full-blown ceremony.
He was just out there with his whole family taking pictures like he didn't destroy a football team for 7 years.
But that's what I'm saying. Like they gave him so much free reign to do whatever he wanted and didn't question it. And when he was like, all right, what I did was terrible. Let's lean into what I did and give them all money. He they were giving him whatever he wanted to do. Even when he was so bad that they knew they had to fire him, they allowed him to retire and gave him like the run of the middle of the field with his family. And
it's crazy.
Let me explain to you how bad their salary cap is. Like, forget about how they entered the off season, how they had to release guys and, you know, ask guys for pay cuts. But right now they have like $4 million in cap space, right? So let's say they, you know, injuries happened in the NFL. It's expected. They're one of the teams that got hit with injuries, you know, last year, and they're known, notoriously known for always having injuries. They don't have, like, they can't restructure another contract.
They restructured the kicker last year.
If you look at their salary cap, right? Like the base, like, you know, restructure, you take the base salary, turn it into They don't have, like, they only have two players, I think, with the base salary of over $3 million. And one of them is Saquon Barkley, who's on the 5th year option. So you can't restructure him. And the other one is Kenny Galladay. Now,
Kenny Galladay's contract is like not being talked about enough.
Yes. You don't want to restructure and make it even worse, right? Like you don't
uncuttable. Want to do that. Like he's uncuttable.
Right. So it's like, what are they going to do? What other options do they have? They don't have like a rookie who's like on his 4th year where you could be like, hey, let me give him an extension.
They restructured Graham Gano's contract last year.
They did.
Twice.
That's incredible. Twice?
Yeah. They might have done it twice.
They did one.
Hey, Graham, here's $7 million. All right. Like, I mean,
Sterling Shepard's contract after he tore his ACL.
That's pretty incredible.
I mean, tore his Achilles. I'm
sorry. Even worse. Because, I mean, obviously, like, I mean, I, you know,
They restructured.
I'm not saying y'all. I'm just saying, like, if anyone who hears this is like, why does that matter? When you restructure a contract, you are giving a player cash money. Yes. In their hands, and right. Basically saying, hey, we need you to help us out by taking this money.
Will, listen to this headline. Giants restructure kicker Graham Gano for $342,000 in cap space. That's a thing that they did last year.
That is pretty tough, man.
Yeah, and then they did it. I think Joe Shane did it again this year to create an extra $3 million. They did it twice. Just embarrassing. And I would say that Kenny Galladay is the most expensive cardio out there right now. I don't even think he's getting cardio. I think he's just existing.
And then it was Kelvin Benjamin up with the Giants too? Or is that the who's the fake Twitter account? I fell for that one.
Wes Steinberg.
I don't fall for fake. Like I'm the originator of, if you fall for a fake Twitter account,
you ate the garbage.
No, you got to take 30. Like you got to step off Twitter for 30 minutes and don't tweet. I don't care if it's the Super Bowl, you fall for that fake Twitter account, especially in NFL free agency. And like, I believe that Kelvin Benjamin like stole a Danish from the Giants headquarters.
Yep. And then got kicked off. Dude. The Twitter account is the name is Wesley Steinberg. And
it
started out as just like the Giants were so bad that like, all right, we got like a parody beat writer account that just everyone like the Giants fans know, the Giants fans laugh at it. And then occasionally like a big media person like yourself will eat the garbage and fall for it. But it got so ridiculous that the Giants were so bad in the middle and the end of last
season. It was believable.
Not only was it believable, but there were some things that account tweeted out earlier in the season that like actually came to fruition because the team was so bad.
It's like imagine if he tweeted like Joe Judge. It's like Joe Judge, sources say Joe Judge is discussing implementing a QB or a QB sneak on third down.
Exactly.
Like in the fourth quarter. Yeah. It's like,
I'm pretty sure.
That's kind of believable, I guess, but it's the stupidest thing I ever heard. And then it actually happened.
Dude, when Joe Judge got fired, I'm like 90 wise. You would know. Didn't he have a pizza party at his house and he like invited
oh my God.
You guys should
do a game. Is this Wesley Steinberg or not?
Right. Like, that's like, the point. Like, I'm pretty sure that's the thing that Joe Judge did at the end of the season. But like, if Wesley Steinberg had tweeted it out like a month before, everyone would be like, haha, Joe Judge says.
But he did have a pizza party, right?
Yes, he did.
Yes.
Like, okay. Pizza and beer. He had like all the players and the coaches over.
But I was worried that I was worried
that it was like, fake.
That's a Wes Steinberg thing that exactly. I thought was real. Because for a minute, I was like, oh my God, that's right. Kelvin Benjamin got thrown out for like stealing food.
But again, such a ridiculous team that you never know.
I think that like, and then, I mean, not to like Dexter Lawrence is one of like, he's from, I mean, from where I'm sitting right now to Dexter Lawrence's house is probably 20 minutes, right?
Oh,
maybe,
really?
Okay. Maybe 30 at most. Like he was between NC State and Clemson. I've watched everyone in North Carolina knows like how good Dexter Lawrence is. And like, I think he's a great player, but Dave Gettleman taking him, like trading up to
in the first round.
Well, it was just like, I, in fact, oh my God, I should bring it up. I mocked the entire, I never changed once the entire lead up to the NFL draft. I had Dave Gettleman taking Dexter Lawrence. I was like, this is a guy that Dave Gettleman is going to take. Like, he's the quintessential hog molly.
Yep.
You know he's going to take him. And it's just like, and then the whole Leonard Williams stuff. And, oh my God. It's like, I don't know why we're ranting on Dave Gettleman, but
because we're both victims. We're both victims.
But it's like crazy how stupid everything was.
Yeah. Yeah, like it's just
it was a parody. That's why a parody account got popular.
And then they were like, oh yeah, just retire at midfield. Like let's have a Dave Gettleman day. You know, yeah.
Like Dave Gettleman is gonna trade for who?
Oh, and then the medium Pepsi. It's like every fan gets a free medium.
Right,
like,
exactly.
But here's the thing, Will. This is like, and I was talking to somebody. This is why Sunday's win meant so much, dude. Like right. You don't understand. Like we've been through so much, man.
Medium
like,
Pepsis and all.
Like
we got big, so you got Dable, like it's like Randy Marsh, like wheeling his nuts in the wheelbarrow, like down the side. He's like, and like Dable's like, yeah.
Wink Martindale with like Jordans on, like giving him high. Like, did you see like Wink Martindale and Dable?
By the way, I picked the Giants to win the game, so I was invested. Really? In oh yeah, I had I went like sub 500 straight up with my picks this week somehow, but I had the Seahawks winning, the Steelers winning, and the Giants winning. Like that's how like what the
that'll bring you back from the dead.
I yeah. always like oh, yeah. two things I say like no team upgraded a head coach more than the Jacksonville Jaguars. I don't care what your opinion is of Doug Peterson.
Oh no, I agree.
Yeah, and then no team upgraded in terms of general manager more than the New York Giants.
And maybe head coach though too. The upgrade
but the thing about that is like Urban Judge Meyer didn't know.
Judge to Dable is probably not as big as Urban to Doug.
It's very right. close.
It's close.
I thought Joe Judge was a failure. I don't even think it's that close.
Urban Meyer is the single worst hire in professional football of all time.
Yes. I agree. Yes.
And
yes.
like, look, no one will fight you on it. Like, no. And he coached for less than a year like in Jacksonville. Yeah. And it's like, it's clearly the single worst head coaching hire of all time.
Yeah. Like, it's not like Urban Meyer went to like, a big city where it's like big media under pressure. He went to Jacksonville, bro.
He couldn't last a year in Jacksonville.
Yeah, he couldn't last a year in Jacksonville.
And within 6 weeks, he had like a coach wouldn't fly with the team and is like groping ass in like his own restaurant in Ohio scandal. Like that's like something from like 97.
Like that's
yeah.
That's why Sunday meant so. That's like so. That's what I'm saying. Like Sunday meant so much. That's why, like, there's optimism, but like a lot of us fans are so permanently scarred from like what happened over the last like 2-3 coaching hires that we're like, we like Dable, but it's like I remember we were like all in on Joe Judge, where it's like, yeah, Joe Judge was a corny guy and he said a lot of corny cliche things, but man, the team like was in games and they weren't talented, and it's tough to like I love Brian Dable, I really do. But it's like I'm not fully there yet just because of the PTSD I have from the last coaching.
All right. Well, I don't blame you at all for that. Like I'm an NC State fan. I got a lot of scars and pain and whatnot. I think the difference there, like Joe Judge, almost exactly like Matt Patricia when he got to Detroit, had a very early moment where it was like, I don't know if he was making dudes run gassers or he's like, there was something where it's like, oh God, he's going to be this year's Hardo.
Right.
Like it's like, this is just what we're going to do. He's like, and Dable never really had that happen. I don't feel like there was never any, like he's,
no.
He's very authentic. Like if you watch
it, there was something with Judge where it was like it was exactly like Patricia, which is hilarious. Yeah,
he was making like veterans like run.
Yeah, he's like laps. And but it's like if you think about it, here's why it makes sense that they're coaching together now. Two guys with no chops, no nothing, no skins on the wall, nothing are trying to act like Belichick.
Yeah,
yes. And it never works for anyone who tries to do that. Because like you're just trying to imitate Bill Belichick. Good luck with that.
Yeah, the stupidest thing that Joe Judge did, now that I think back on it, like his introductory press conference was so praised, but he came in and like he wouldn't name player names, like guys that you knew were going to be around for a while. Like he wouldn't name Daniel Jones's name. Like he wouldn't say Daniel Jones.
We like what he does at the position.
Yeah.
Like, it was just weird stuff like that.
We used to joke that he sat down in his interview with John Mara. He just had to put on an NYPD hat and he just had the job. Like that's all he had to do.
And he does look, I mean, yeah, like it's that actually, that's
like, if you look at him, just
like, that would be funnier if it wasn't like probably true.
No, it's absolutely true. If you look at him, just no Giants gear on, like you're like,
and then you're a it's like 95 degrees in Miami and he's wearing a sweatshirt. Did you guys see that? Like, I'm like, dude, come on, man. Like,
but like, that's the thing is like Dable is like a big time football guy and is like he's coached with Saban. He's coached with Belichick, just like Joe Judge. But
he's genuine. Like he's not trying to be Belichick.
He doesn't come across as someone who's trying to be like a hard ass who like for unnecessary reasons. But I know this moment got talked about. Like Scott Hansen brought it up on Red Zone, but when he yelled understandably yelled at Daniel Jones.
Yes.
Like, hey, look, man. We are this close to a massive upset and a massive win. We got a freebie down here. The one thing you can't do is throw that pick. And he got in his face, but it wasn't like clownish. It was just like emphatic. Like you could hear, it's like when you do something stupid as a kid and your dad, fair.
Well, Will, you know,
Daniel Jones bounced back and responded to it. And I think that's important.
I agree that that's important, but you know what Daboll's excuse was when the media asked him about Daniel Jones thing?
No, I didn't hear the answer.
Oh my God. They were like, oh, like, were you yelling at Daniel Jones? He goes, no, I was yelling into my headset. If you go watch the video, he doesn't have a headset.
No, he takes the headset off.
That's great.
And then starts yelling.
But that's actually that's a great way to answer that question.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Because everyone's like, oh, all right, you should yell into his headset. It's like, what? Like, no, yeah, I didn't agree.
And then the whole situation with Kadarius Toney, like I think, Kadarius Toney played 7 snaps on Sunday. Now I don't know the Giants roster.
I saw 2 of the catches. I thought he looked kind of.
He's a freak. He is a freak.
He's such a freak.
And I think the big problem.
The big rapper too.
Yes. He's actually got some great sound bites. I don't know if
my buddy Mike Glennon has mentioned his rap prowess.
Yeah. Nice. You got to watch his. You got to watch his press conferences. He has some great sound bites. He had one today too. Like, I think somebody asked him, hey, were you mad you didn't play? He's like, nah, man, we got the win. What do you want, a dollar? Like, that's, he has some zingers, man.
I like that.
But just the way he's handling that, and you can tell, he's like, look, he's not learning the playbook. He's not picking up on the playbook.
And he's dogging it in practice with Jordan Ron.
There's like stuff going on there. Today. And it's like,
he's not trying.
Okay. And that's sort of gaining trust with the other players because there's accountability there. I don't care if you're a first-round pick. I don't care if you're the starting quarterback.
I don't care if you're getting paid $72 million.
Right.
Right. They would have cut. Kenny Galladay 100% gets cut if
oh, yeah.
It's like, it doesn't make financial, like you, there's no financial gain.
There is no way out of it.
Yeah, you just have to have him on the roster this year.
Yes, yes. So just like that accountability thing is huge. And then obviously the aggressiveness we talked, like aggressive going forward, you know, Joe Judge would never do that. And there was always that bullshit, like what he would be like, I'm playing the field position or some shit like that. Some stupid excuse he would bring up for punting on like 4th and 2 from the 30 opponent's like 42 yard line. Like you can just sense like Daboll understands modern football.
Yeah.
And like so many people are like, dude, it's just week 1. I'm like, listen, you do not understand. You do not understand what we've gone through. And I'll tell you this. I'm sort of getting off topic here.
We've been off topic the whole episode.
I think the entire podcast has been off topic.
Robert Saleh.
Saleh's thing today was weird.
You are going – like, that is Joe Judge. Like, that's what happened. Joe Judge would still be coaching the Giants if he did not run his mouth.
Yes. 100%. They did not want to fire him. They're embarrassed by continually firing people. But it was like – it got so bad. What was the – Oh my God. Bill Bardwell and I did like an entire podcast about Joe Judge and his lies.
Yeah. He was an awful liar.
No, but he's like, I get 15 emails a day from Giants fans. It's like,
yes.
Whoa. Okay. First of all,
he said there's former players calling me.
You want to come back? Oh my God. That's right. I forgot that Bardwell, we did it like a 45 minute podcast breaking down that press conference after the loss where he's like, it's like, oh, we need to look at these 17 different lies. He's like, we went and looked at like, and I'm sure you guys did too, but it was like, who's a player that could have like called, and there's two candidates maybe who were, it's like BJ Hill's like, hey coach, like, I'm at the Super Bowl.
I'm in the AFC Championship game, but I want to come back and play for the Giants. Like,
I'm trying to think who we remembered it was, but it was like, we figured out it was like two candidates and
it's like one or two special teams.
And players. It didn't really make any sense that they were like, hey, coach, I'm dying to come back here. Yeah. You're right. If Joe Judge had just shut up and taken the L's in like a normal fashion, he's probably still the coach of the Giants.
Because there was a fall guy there for him. All he had to do, just stop talking. Didn't do it.
Yeah.
And Daboll, I think, really.
Can I go get more bourbon, by the way?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I need more ice and bourbon. And then we'll
go ahead.
Yeah. So, all right, then we'll do Carolina, New York. And talk about the game.
Oh man. All right. So while Will's going to get his bourbon, Weiss, I'd love to know your thoughts quickly on the Giants Panthers matchup.
Because I think this is a very good matchup for the Panthers, dude.
I agree. And we went over this in our season preview, but I think that their strengths match up very well with the Giants' weaknesses.
Especially with the two pass rushers out.
Two
pass rushers in, you're like, okay, maybe you can get pressure on Baker Mayfield.
And we saw how bad Baker looked with guys in his face all day. I mean, honestly, it was almost like a Giants-Titans game where like they got absolutely obliterated in the first half and then started to figure it out in the second half. But when you're down, I mean, they were down like 14, 21 – I don't remember what it was.
Two scores. Yeah,
they were down two scores. It's tough to figure it out. DJ Moore going to be an absolute nightmare for a secondary that's missing. I mean,
big thing is Christian McCaffrey.
The big thing is Christian McCaffrey against the Giants practice squad group of linebackers. But at the same time, you have Adoree Jackson, and that's basically it. Like, if they can isolate DJ Moore and get him in a lineup with Aaron Robinson was starting, and Aaron Robinson is absolute dog water. Whoever his replacement is come Sunday is going to be three times worse.
Fabian Moreau was like a veteran guy that jumped around the league.
It's going to be bad. Well, we're talking about how the Panthers match up very well with the Giants, especially with some of their issues on defense without their pass rushers. We're talking about Christian McCaffrey, DJ Moore, but the Giants, like, they have Adoree Jackson. Adoree Jackson played really well in Tennessee, by the way. Always been a big Adoree Jackson guy. He sort of like goes under the radar because he was a Gettleman signing. He has had health issues since 2018, but just like a very solid all around player.
Yeah.
But some sneaky like ball hawk skills too.
Yes.
Very much. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, without Aaron Robinson, I mean, the secondary is going to be a bit of a disaster. Between Robbie Anderson and DJ Moore,
I haven't like done like a deep dive on the Giants Titans game to be perfect. I haven't. I mean, that's
just watch the second half.
No. I watched the game and I watch it, but I haven't like, I'm saying that to preface this question. How do you guys feel about the Giants pass rush coming into this game? Because I think that is, I mean, and this applies to like what 70% of NFL games, but like that is what is going to make the difference, because if Baker's under pressure, he's not going to have a great game.
Right. I think that this is going to be a Wink Martindale special because
that's right.
He loves to blitz.
That's what he does. He simply blitzes.
Personality trait.
Blitzing. He wears Jordans and he blitzes. That's
like, I have dark hair. Wink Martindale blitzes.
Yes, you know? Exactly.
And wears Jordans. Those are the two things.
He has old man swag.
He does.
Very much.
But like without Thibodeau, without Aziz, like, well, if you like go back and watch, I mean, it wasn't even that the Giants weren't getting any pressure. It was even when Tannehill rolled out, or any defensive lineman had to move, it looked like they were wearing stone shoes. Like, they were really good against the run. They were really good against Henry. They were really good at setting the edge and containing Tannehill for the most part, but they got absolutely zero pressure. Part of me thinks that that was the game plan, and we might see a bit more pressure against Baker given how overwhelmed he looked in the first half against the Browns. But again, like, the talent disparity on the defensive lines, at least from a pass rusher perspective between the Giants and the Browns, is just so drastic. Giants are 2.5-point favorites at home. I think that this is maybe a little bit of an overreaction. It should be closer to a pick 'em.
I agree completely. Sorry, I was looking to see if I was looking to see if McAdoo has any direct matchups with Martindale, because I think that's interesting. Okay. Wink Martindale is going to, like, he's bringing pressure from all different places. And this is really the schematic matchup that maybe y'all are talking about with McCaffrey and DJ Moore. Is McCaffrey, if you correctly utilize him offensively against pressure, he will obliterate your defense. Because if, let's say, you send six, right? Or if you send five and you're dropping defensive linemen, or you're sending four and dropping defensive linemen, and you get McCaffrey in space, all of a sudden you go from having seven linebackers and safeties and cornerbacks,
right,
to having two defensive linemen, and McCaffrey will eat that free space up. Like, that's what he does best. So I think Ben McAdoo is probably a better coach than his general reputation. You guys could disagree with that as Giants fans, obviously, but, like, schematically, he's not a terrible coach. I didn't like at all what they did against Cleveland in week one. I'm just wondering. I mean, look, I'm not an NFL coach, but I realize that Don Martindale is going to bring heat. Yes. I am getting I'm running Christian McCaffrey on, like, Texas routes 50 times in the first quarter. Like, that's every play we run, is like, whether it's play action, but, like, I'm not trying to pound it up the middle. I'm not trying to be, like, establish an identity. I'm getting Christian McCaffrey out in space on, like, outside the hash marks or across the middle, where we know that Martindale's bringing pressure. Like, he's going to bring pressure from different places. If you get McCaffrey in the right matchup, all of a sudden he's, and you guys just said, terrible linebacking core. You're getting McCaffrey against a bad linebacking group with space to move if he gets up front. I mean, you would think that McAdoo would also know that, right? Yes.
In theory.
Right. That's
unless Wink is just going to go full Costanza and just
Chicken salad on toast.
Chicken salad on toast with a cup of tea.
Yeah. Hi, I'm George, and I live with my
parents. I'm unemployed, and I live with my parents.
I'm Victoria.
Hi. I'm glad we have a guest that understands my Seinfeld reference.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
It's gonna be such an interesting game. Like, I thought the Panthers were gonna win last weekend.
I did too.
And just not even from, like, Browns or don't have Deshaun Watson standpoint. Like Weiss said when we first started, like, I genuinely believe that the Panthers are probably better than people perceive them. And it wound up being a close game in the end. And the Giants were
terrible in the first half.
I mean, so were the Giants. And if you go back and look at the Giants game, there were so many points where they got lucky. I mean, outside of the field goal to lose the game. And God knows how many times that the Giants have had 60-yard field goals kicked against them to win the game over the last 5 years. I mean, it was like watching a horror movie and you're frozen, you can't move. Thankfully, they missed it. But, like, Vrabel big-brained himself so many times. I mean, there was a 3rd-and-1. He had Derrick Henry lined up in the wildcat. Like, why are you getting so cute? He fumbles the ball. There was another one. It was a 3rd-and-3. They ran a tight end sweep for a loss of 5 yards. Like, the Saquon fumble. The last 5 years, that ball gets punched out, it gets recovered instead of rolling.
Aren't there another fumble too, where, like, it should have gone? Maybe it wasn't that game.
There was a review where Dable challenged the guy's knee was down, saved him like 5 yards. But, like, there again, like, you need luck in the NFL.
For sure.
The Giants had a bunch of plays go their way in the second half. So I think it's just going to be a super interesting game.
It's also like, I mean, just from a, and I don't think this applies as much to NFL players as college players, but from a, like, the Giants feel like, oh man, I mean, do you guys think the Giants like organization, I mean, based on Joe Shane's quotes, I don't believe that they didn't come into the season thinking like you're a player on that team. You're like, we can win the Super Bowl. Like you're not like, I don't buy, you have to feel that way as an NFL player. I don't buy that every single player on that team was like, hell yeah, we can win the Super Bowl.
Like, it was basically like 90 men, then 53 men who are like auditioning to be on an NFL roster, whether it's the Giants or another team. That was the mindset.
Right. And so now the Giants have won this huge game against the Titans where it's like that game is by you so much as a coach and GM and coaching staff and even like players who succeeded. And the Panthers, meanwhile, are like, I mean, if Carolina loses and goes 0-2 against Cleveland and the Giants.
Oh, that seat is hot.
It's scorching. Like he's not going to make it at like Halloween in October, you know, like,
yeah.
And so I think there is that. Maybe it's internal pressure, but it's also internal motivation. I'm not saying that, you know what I mean? Like I think the Panthers need a little bit more. And that's just an extra X factor.
Do you know why it's such a big game for Carol? Like obviously the 0-2 thing, but like, I remember listening to somebody in sort of the media that were talking, like David Tepper had to cough up a little bit more money to get Matt Rhule not to get on that plane to go and meet with John Mara.
Yeah.
So like you lose to the Giants, a team that everybody knows is like, it's a rebuilding team. Meanwhile, it's Carolina who's like, this is the year we're supposed to like be competitive. That's not going to sit well with.
I don't think that like Carolina necessarily, again, you go back to, are we on the same page? David Tepper wants a winner this year. Matt Rhule doesn't think that they have a team that's supposed to be good, but it doesn't matter because his seat's so hot.
Right. But I think, Will, back to your point, like what it does, like the Giants came into the season. There were probably guys who are here that have contracts here that are like, okay, like this season is about learning the new system, trying to play my ass off, and we'll see what happens. There were some other guys who were probably on one-year deals or practice squad players, like the whole linebacking core, who were like, I'm like auditioning. Like I shouldn't be starting, but I am, or I do have a chance to start. Like I'm just going to get some reps. And that mindset changes because nobody in America outside of Will Brinson,
apparently me, yeah, right,
the Giants to go in as 5.5-point underdogs and beat the Titans in week one in a brand new system with Daniel Jones as your quarterback and Saquon sort of a huge question mark. And now you look at their schedule, they're 2.5-point favorites at home against Carolina. Then they're hosting the Cowboys, who are going to be without Dak and without Tyron Smith. And then they host the Chicago Bears. All of a sudden, like, is it so crazy to think that they start 4-0? I mean, after that, it's a bit of a gauntlet. Then you have to go to Green Bay, and then you host the Ravens. But, like, a good start, that does a lot for a player's confidence, for a coach's confidence. Like, it's snowball effect here. And, like, yeah, like, this game is big for the Panthers because, like, of all the reasons that we've spoken about.
The Giants have just a very viable schedule.
Well, now they do. But, like, I mean, Weiss, how many wins did you have, Matt? You had them at 5 wins. I had them at six. I had them at 6 wins. There's a chance they start 4-0.
That would be
insane. Yeah. I mean, they're at Jaguars. They have to Packers and Ravens, probably two L's. But yeah, I mean, you never know.
Jaguars, Seahawks,
Texans at home, Lions at home, at Cowboys. Dak ain't coming back in 4 weeks. That's complete bullshit. And the Commanders twice.
Split those, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, Colts at home. I mean, who knows? I mean, it is crazy how that like
changes everything.
If they lost like 13-6,
right?
Like, I mean, they're not winning at Jacksonville or at Seattle. You know what I mean? Like, it's
the mentality that Weiss and I both had coming into the season, it was like, this is going to be the least stressful season the Giants have had in 5 years because we know the roster sucks. It's a new coaching staff. We know the quarterback's not going to be here next year. Like,
the GM has a vision.
The GM has a vision, exactly. Like, we're just going to just sit along and enjoy the ride. And after 1 week, we're enjoying it far more than I think.
Yeah, but now if you get 3-0, you're like, it's going to be the worst Giants season because you're like, it's like, because the Panthers did this last year. They went, they started out 3-0. They beat the Giants, Jets, Giants, and Texans. And they went 5-12. And it's like, because you go from 3, I mean, it didn't bother me, but it felt like people were like, are the Panthers good? It's like, well, maybe this defense is good. And they're not.
I think Sam Darnold, so.
What, trying to look at the NFC East odds. So the Eagles are minus 160.
As they should be.
I bet them at 2-1 earlier this offseason. I have the Eagles to win the Super Bowl, or to Ravens over Eagles in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, we just had Warren Sharp on. He said his portfolio is very heavy Eagles winning the NFC.
Where are the 5-1 for the Giants?
They're not winning the East.
I'd like 10-1. I'd do it.
Yeah, but like, listen, like this is a team who had a win total of 7.5. So you know, if they come close to that, or they finish with 8 wins, I mean, they've exceeded my expectations. They've exceeded Vegas's expectations. Like, I can't be anything but thrilled.
Well, yeah, if you're gonna, like, forget the NFCs for a second. How many wins do you think you need to be a wild card team in the NFC?
I think 9 can get you there if depending on how things break.
Okay, so 9. So like, you look at the Giants' schedule and you're like, if they start, let's say they win Sunday, they're 2-0. Now it's like 7-8 wins in the picture now. And if that is, then you're like, okay, well,
yeah. If you beat the Panthers, and you've got probably the Cowboys twice without Dak. The Cowboys suck. The Cowboys suck. You got the Bears at home, the Texans at home, at Seattle, at Jacksonville. Lions at home. Yeah, like
get a big emotional win at home against the Eagles. You know, like a big. One of those big,
I wouldn't even worry. I'd just take the 0-2 against the Eagles and like focus on the other. Like,
no, but I'm saying like you get, these teams, they get one of those emotional wins,
all of a sudden, and this is the effed up thing about the NFL is like, if the Giants lose like 34-7 to the Panthers, you're like, well, we,
we thought they were.
Yeah. Well, that was a bad week for the false hope run of New York Giants.
No, Week one was fun because of everything that happened in the past. To me,
let me flip this question on its head.
Sure.
Because I think this is extremely important relative to the mindset of ownership versus the mindset of Joe Shane and Brian Daboll. If the Giants were to win 9 games and go to the playoffs.
Yeah.
The question is Daniel Jones?
Yeah, I'll answer.
The answer is no.
but if the Giants go to the playoffs this year, you think that ownership is going to let? They love Daniel Jones,
right? I will answer this.
If the Giants go to the playoffs, that means Daniel Jones did something good over the course of 17 games.
Yes, so he didn't throw a lot of red zone interceptions during the season.
But maybe the larger, more specific question is: Will Giants ownership? Foist upon Joe Shane the idea that Daniel Jones took us to the playoffs, we'd like you to try it one more year, maybe a franchise tag.
I don't think they can afford it.
here's how I answer that.
But you know what I'm saying?
When Brandon Bean took over that one year, the Bills went to the playoffs with Tyrod Taylor.
Yes.
They lost in the wild card round.
They actually benched Tyrod for Nathan Peterman, who threw 6 interceptions.
Yeah, right. And then they went back and they went to the playoffs as a wild card team, lost in that wild card game against the Jaguars. And they were picking like 16th, right? And then they moved up to get Josh Allen. They did actually 2 trades, I think. It was they got rid of Cordy Glenn to got up to 12 with the Bengals. Then they made another trade.
This is what no one talks about with the Josh Allen trade. They had an extra first round pick because they had traded back with the Chiefs the year before to let the Chiefs get Patrick Mahomes.
Right.
Which is kind of crazy. Like they actually opened the door for Mahomes versus Allen.
Right. I think it would all depend on how Daniel Jones looks and what other options are available.
Do you guys think that, and I don't know the answer to this, but do you think that Daboll and Shane, when they, and obviously they interviewed separately, but there's a package process. Do you think that they told ownership, we can make it work with Daniel Jones? Or do you think they said, we can make it work?
No.
We can't commit to, you know what I'm saying? Like,
Do you know why? Because if this quarterback class was the 2021 quarterback class, Joe Shane was taking a quarterback. Joe Shane was at Notre Dame, Ohio State 2 weeks ago.
Sure.
He was spotted at Texas, Alabama last week. And then at night, he was spotted in Gainesville at Kentucky.
I think they're in the market for a quarterback. I'm just saying, like,
here's the bottom line is I am of the belief that Joe Shane is incredibly smart. And I think that he knows that even if the Giants somehow sneak out 8 or 9 games, It is very likely in spite of Daniel Jones and because of the coaching. And he loves Josh Allen. Like, he witnessed firsthand what an elite top five quarterback can do for your organization. He knows what that looks like. I think he knows that that's not what Daniel Jones is. And I think that regardless of how this season turns out, unless something disastrous happens with this upcoming quarterback class, which I think we're all anticipating being very fun and exciting, like Anthony Richardson.
I mean, is it that great?
I think it's very great.
All right. I mean,
see, I'm not with great yet, but there's a lot of flavor.
I think it's being oversold a little bit because of how bad the last one was.
I guess, but like if you go back to 2018, like you have Lamar,
Lamar Josh went Allen. Back in the first round though.
Yeah, I know. You got Baker, and then you have Duds and Darnold and Josh Rosen. But, like, I mean, I don't know. I think you got a pretty good
look.
Bryce, Stroud, Levis, Richardson. Like,
you mentioned Devin Leary from New York, sure. From Jersey. Yeah. How dare you?
I know.
Devin Sorry. Leary's actually – he actually looked terrible the first two games.
But point being, like, there's going to be a lot of options. And, again, like, the season is so long. Like, Zach Wilson didn't emerge as a top five pick until –
What do you think Daniel Jones' ceiling is? I think his ceiling is Ryan Tannehill, which you saw last week.
I think that's a really good answer. that's right.
And I think that there's
just enough mobility where you can kind of use design runs to create to throw the defense off its off kilter, but also like. I think it's a very good comp. I mean, enough accuracy where you can make it work if everything's good around you. You prefer to lean on the running game and someone who does have spike weeks, but also, although Daniel Jones much more turnover prone than Ryan Tannehill.
Yes. Although I will to his credit, I mean, I know he threw a bad interception. The turnovers I think are that narrative is a little outdated. He has cut the turnovers down, but at the expense of him just not.
Doing much.
What did he like Jameis Winston level turnovers?
In his rookie season, yeah. Rookie and then the last 2 years, they've been cut down. I think it would literally take.
The fumbles are the problem, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It's not even the picks, it's the fumbles.
The big problem is the injuries. Like him missing games is a huge problem right now.
He's showing up to camp with mysterious scars on his neck.
So I was talking to Brady Quinn about this today for my podcast. It sounded like humble brag. It was not intended to be. Brady Quinn was on my podcast today because he, for some reason, Brady likes me and he comes on like every week during the season. But we were talking about, is it crazy that here's my theory on, it's not a theory because I don't want to make it a theory, but like Dak Prescott didn't miss a game. His NFL career until Mike McCarthy was hired by the Cowboys.
Yep.
And he suffered two fluke, and I'm doing air quotes there, fluke injuries. But when he suffered the injuries, one was against the Giants.
Yeah.
Remember, he was like, they did their like third straight week of a crazy comeback. And so Dak's doing things that he shouldn't be doing because the offense was not set up like the team, like the offense did not do its job. And so Dak was forced to come back. So he suffers an injury. And then against Tampa Bay, they've scored 3 points. The offensive line is not serving its purpose. And so like, I'm not saying that Mike McCarthy caused the injury, but I'm saying like, because the coaching was poor and the setup around Dak was poor, the injuries may have occurred. And so I'm wondering, is Daniel Jones also like maybe he gets hurt because he's forced to be more aggressive with his running to make mistakes into tight windows because
the roster is poor.
Yeah, exactly.
Roster's poor, including the offensive line, mainly the offensive line. Coaching has not helped at all. Although Pat Shurmur, I think, did a good job that 1 year with him.
But you know what I'm saying? Like we treat players as injury prone.
Right.
Versus noting that they are put into suboptimal situation. Like Patrick Mahomes doesn't have to deal with this.
But some of the Daniel Jones stuff is self-inflicting because he'll take off and run. And rather than getting down, he's like, no, I'm going to like put my head down and try to run through a lot.
Carson Wentz, RG3 stuff.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a complicated conversation with Daniel Jones. It's very incomplete. You know,
I fans don't want Daniel Jones to be the quarterback in 2023.
they don't believe that he, I mean, it's been 3 years,
right?
No, I don't think he's the guy. I don't
no,
think
he's not
the Super Bowl with him.
Right. No, he's not the guy.
If the bottom line is to win a Super Bowl, no, I don't. He's not the guy.
Like, I think talent, like at the end of the day, talent prevails. Like you would see just way more out of him despite the bad coaching. I'm not asking him to be like an elite superstar being coached by Joe Judge and Jason Garrett and, you know, the rosters that he's had. But like at the same time, like what are you showing me and giving me on a weekly basis? Like the Giants won that game because of Saquon Barkley. They didn't win it because of Daniel Jones.
Saquon looked awesome.
He was incredible. Looked
very good.
Yeah. Yeah. How it's, oh my God, they're going to pay him. Oh, okay.
They won't franchise tag. I think if you see stuff like this on a consistent basis, and that's a big if, by the way, with Saquon too, then you start having that discussion of franchise
tag.
Yeah, but then
it's complicated. It's a very
ownership really likes Saquon too.
But again,
Saquon has like a
but one thing about
800 yards from scrimmage season, he's getting a big contract.
One thing about ownership is they've gone into hiding. They've basically led Joe Shane and Brian Dable will be the face of everything.
Yeah. And so I don't think that Joe Shane's taking this job unless he says, like,
I want full control.
Look at the mess you've made. I will clean it up. But
Joe Shane had options too, by the way. Yeah. He had options.
For sure. But like, he's almost like, look, when I say you can't meddle, like, I want in my contract that I have final say.
Yes.
Like, you can't tell me to give a running back a contract. Because, I mean, if Saquon went for 2,000 scrimmage yards,
oh, John Mara's running to the bank. It's
just like lobbing like $100 bills all over.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Carolina, Giants. All right, Sunday.
Let's talk about the game. Let's get right.
Who do you got? Who do you got winning the game Sunday?
Let me double check. I'm pretty sure I said Carolina. I think it's be close. I had to send my picks earlier. I think I said Carolina would win. I'm trying to think what flipped me.
It's just a must-win for Carolina.
Carolina.
To me, it's the matchups for Carolina. It just favor them across the board.
I'm going Carolina as well.
I got to go with the Panthers.
I also think that, like, I think that a lot of the general public will say, wow, the Giants had this great win, and the Panthers had this, like, crazy, like, you know, the Panthers lost to the Browns at home without Deshaun Watson. And I mean, I say, like, essentially, like, most people are going to take the Giants as a short favorite at home. I think
it's a very classic week one overreaction.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I don't like the thing that concerns me is the Panthers look so bad. The only team that had lower yardage, net yardage at the end of the first half last week than the Bears, who had 27 net yards for the Panthers.
Damn.
If the Panthers lose to the Giants, you start talking about Matt Rhule's coaching job and when he'll get fired.
Yeah.
If the Giants win that game, then we start to have a different conversation about the Giants.
Well, you guys are like going to be talking about you guys are going to be doing like
playoffs.
But you're going to be doing like Miami club music while you do this pod. Like,
oh yeah,
it'll be a different conversation.
It's going to be a part.
I really do
the Brian Dable statue.
Yeah,
it's a very tough matchup for the Giants. So if they win, we're having a different conversation.
It is. All right,
Will.
We've been, I think.
I don't think we talked about anything, by the way.
No, we just talked, and that's totally fine. But we're over like an hour and 15 at this point, I think. So we'll let you go. We appreciate it. Recurring guest Will Brinson. Follow him on Twitter at Will Brinson. Go take in all his content, the podcast. He's on YouTube. If you're a kid now, apparently that's like a cool thing. He's on YouTube. Go read his stuff, listen to his stuff, watch his stuff. Will, thank you. We'll chat soon.
Anytime, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Will.